Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Ask a Muso podcast, brought to you by Yellow Music. And today I'm kicking off season four with a very close friend of mine, someone I'm very excited to have not only in my home, but in my life, John Justice. Welcome to the Ask a Muso podcast and say a bit of a g'day.
G'day. Thank you very much for having me and giving me a sandwich.
Oh, look, Aaron did the sandwich for the record. And I'm stoked to have you here because when I first met you, which feels like ages ago now, but was figuratively not that long ago, back when we were on tour in the US, I instantly was drawn to you, and we had many deep, fun chats in the RV on the way to various places in Illinois. And I wanted to understand a bit more about you and where sort of music started for you. I know a bit about Dell, a bit about your brother, but what's your earliest memory of music and playing it and getting involved?
My earliest memory of music, I feel like I can see like a time warp, like a visual, like in a movie happening in my brain right now. I think probably the first time I was involved in music that I really remember, probably like fifth grade, like there was this program at the library that where we did folk music, and I was the youngest by like probably dozens of decades. It was like my mom, sometimes my sister Anna, and me, and then like a bunch of like 50 to 90 year olds. And it was like once a week, I think. So I would have been fifth grade, I don't know, like 9 or 10. And we played a lap dulcimer. I think we made some out of cardboard as well.
Wow.
And if you don't know what a lap dulcimer is, I guess you could look it up. It's kind of hard to describe.
Yeah, I'll try and find a picture. So whilst you're doing this on the camera, yeah. I put something here so that we don't get demonetized yet.
Yeah, sweet. Well, anyway, it's like a folk instrument from like Appalachia, I think. That's the first time I remember like really being involved in like group music. And there's photos of me playing piano when I'm like a little kid, like 2 or 3. But I doubt that I was like really playing it properly, you know. My brother was in a band in high school called Delacoma.
Yeah.
That's where the name came from. It was his high school band.
Right. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I don't think my parents would let us go because they thought rock music was like of the devil.
Oh, yes.
So I'm from a very religious upbringing. And I would have been like 3 or 4 or 5.
Yeah. So it was
so not
really. Not really on your radar at all.
Yeah. But my mom specifically always said she wanted to have a piano in the house at any point during our growing up, in case one of us was interested in doing music, we would have access to it. And like we had my grandpa's old violin and his old, like super old, like from the 30s, like accordion, like piano accordion. So I played that a little bit when I was younger. And then church. I was singing in church like 3 times a week.
Yeah, yeah. And that's where you sort of cut your teeth on performing in front of other people.
No, not performing.
Oh, so just...
So the way the church that we went to was just congregational singing a cappella. So there's one guy that stands at the front of the church doing one of these, you know, kind of pointlessly. I mean, it's supposed to be keeping time, but most of the time he's not like a professional musician. So they're just kind of like...
Yeah.
Yeah, like, let's go. And then you would have like a songbooks. Everyone in the congregation would have songbooks. And would sing along, and a lot of people, you know, don't know what they're doing, so they just kind of hope for the best. But I mean, it's a really cool feeling when you're like when in a room with like when I was in Nebraska, like 200, 300 people.
And it's a magnificent room because it's a room that's designed for it to sound magnificent.
Yeah, I mean, the ceilings are probably like 3 stories.
Yeah, 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 that's pretty impressive.
So I would switch back and forth, singing the different parts. My mom would sing the super high soprano part. She was like the loudest person in the church. And my dad always sang like the tenor harmonies. And I don't know, I switched back and forth. But I'd say like that's probably the biggest influence early on me of music was just, you know, like singing with a lot of people, I think helps your confidence because you know that I mean, the people standing right around you can hear you. But it's not like you're standing on a stage, like, just singing for everyone and everyone's, like, staring at
you. I'm looking at you. Yeah, for sure.
Just all staring at the front of the stage and whatever.
So what does, I suppose then, since it was such a big part of your growing up, what does music mean to you as someone that now writes songs, writes a lot of songs, yeah, and does a lot of stuff like that? Like, what does that mean to you as a brand of art, as an expression?
Wow. That's a big question. I guess in the best moments for me, it's like a transcendent experience. So I guess in a way I would say it's like indescribable.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, what that means to me is priceless. Like,
the way I see it is, like, not to jump in, but the way I see it is to sort of help maybe you collect your thoughts is, from my perspective, I do this show as a way to connect with musicians I value and want to learn more about. But a lot of the people are not, the viewing are those that enjoy what we do on the stage or whatever like that. So for them, it's maybe how can we relate what we feel in that transcendence, in that really exciting experience where you're feeling something that can't really be described. It's both an adrenaline rush, but it's also, it's all the endorphins. I was saying this to Jesse for Sailing in Space the other night. It's an experience of essentially no negative effects. It's like laughter. Mm. Jimmy Carr says, you know, you get all the endorphins without any of the withdrawal. There's no drug. You get the drug part that happens in your brain when you take things, but it's 100% natural. There's no substances involved. I suppose I'm trying to think, how would you explain that? How would you explain that to someone that's never actually done it?
Yeah.
Maybe that would make it easier in a smaller, more bite-sized question.
Okay, yeah, because you're like, we only have 2 hours of recording time in this card. Okay, here's a way I can describe it. When I play piano, a real piano that's well-tuned, and I'm really, like, not thinking about the end product at all. I'm just, like, I like to improvise and just make stuff up. When I'm really in the moment on that, I feel like literally weightless. And I had a therapist once ask me the same question, basically. Like, if you close your eyes and you could be doing anything in your life that, you know, you want to be doing and there's no anything,
what would it be?
Yeah. She was like, what do you picture? Like, how do you want to be feeling? And it's this, when I did that, I was overwhelmed by the feeling of sitting at a piano, just playing it, and it was like I was floating above the seat and light was coming out of my fingertips and like toes and face. And it was like I actually can't access all of the feeling because my body is triggering the I'm going to die, this is too much.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, there's a little piece of it, and now I'm going to go back to just being stone-faced and like, yeah, that'd be pretty cool, I guess.
Yeah, so once again, it goes back to what we're saying just before. So I'm going to write down a few things while we're talking today, John. Yeah. You don't need to be worried about those. I'm just going to make a few notes on my end.
Yeah.
To segue from that, we were talking just before off-camera about one of your tracks, Make It Through. For me, I haven't actually shared this with you, but for me, I actually felt the most emotional I felt on stage outside of playing my own music, which I currently play, I thought you should know, with the Sailing Space chaps. Outside of that feeling of actually properly having a song of mine be played with a band and everyone clapping and loving it,
yeah,
I feel an emotional response to Make It Through when I play it. It's gushy, it's flowy from a drumming perspective, and I like that we get to have our musical harmony part at the start.
Yeah.
And you were talking about just utilizing words that perhaps haven't been used in a while. And to circle back to what we were talking about that I wanted to mention in the pod, it was essentially there is an element of commerciality that needs to be made with something, much like there is an element of artist expression that has no bounds, but you shouldn't stray too far to either side. Coming up with a list of things that you think people like and then making your version of that, as opposed to coming up with something that you couldn't care less if anyone likes. It's just your brain project and it's, you know, 97 minutes MP3 of you having thoughts with a piano and just playing different notes and narrating it. That might be a little too niche for people to really wrap their cheetahs around.
Yeah.
Where do you think the balance is?
Man, I've been thinking about that a lot recently. Because it's so much work. to try to be a musician out in the world. And I was going to say, especially these days, I don't know what it was like before because I've only tried to be
You've only been in these
a
days.
Musician out in the world for the last like 2 years. And before that, it was just, I just do whatever I feel like. Play at my house. And I guess I jammed with some people sometimes. But can you ask me the question again?
Now, I didn't include this in the episode I did with your brother, but he did the exact same thing about something else. He just started on this tangent about Japan or something. He's like, Anyway, so what was it again? Where do we start? No, so essentially, where do you think the balance is between just commercial, I'm making something for the sake of I've heard people are going to like it, I want to make something that I could almost aggressively couldn't give a fuck if anyone else likes it
because
it's my brain project. Where do you think that balance is?
Yeah, okay. So when I write a song, most of the time it's just like completely free form, like off the top of my head. And a lot of times I'll listen back to it and I'm like, I don't even know what this means. Like I either didn't know I thought that, whatever I'm talking about, or I'm like, okay, yeah, it's like it's another one of those songs.
Sure.
Right? Like and I kind of have this like running list of like, I've got these kind of styles of song. And every once in a while, one will come out. I'm like, all right, well, that goes in that pile. You know, that's a piano ballad about trying to get better at being a human being. Cool. Like, I've got 12 of them.
Yeah. Put that one on the list. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe someday I'll have a secretary that can file them all for me and be like, statistically, this one's the most interesting. And they'll be like, all right, well, record that one. Anyway. Yeah. I do think about it basically all day long because I don't really want to think about, you know, what does any audience anywhere want? Because I'm like, how would I ever know that?
That is so like unequivocally big. It's such a big theme to try and even touch.
Yeah. It's like, well, yeah, if I were to get lucky and get onto a festival circuit in the US and be playing like, you know, 2 o'clock in a side tent and there's hundreds of people there because they're just kind of bumming around waiting for their favorite artist, you know, like would what I'm doing appeal to a good chunk of them? Would the people there have a good time?
I get that, but when I think of that, I think about what I play with Jesse and Dylan, and the two of the biggest crowd raisers are Bad Company and Never Getting Better.
Yeah.
And even just in the titles, you know, they're not happy songs.
Yeah.
Like when everyone's singing, when I'm alone, like it's not happy. It's not hidden. It's not thinly veiled. It's very clearly when I'm by myself, I'm miserable.
Yeah.
But it's boppy. So everyone's having a grouse time. So when you said about, are people going to have a good time?
Yeah.
I think the Venn diagram of people going to have a good time, are they going to understand this? They don't even need a crossover because some people may never understand any of it and just think it's sick.
Yeah.
And that's, I suppose, where you wouldn't tailor your music to be like that, but that's what you're looking for in those instances.
Yeah. Well, and that's the confusing thing is, like, I think about the lyrics almost exclusively. I think about, like, the flow of the set, like we were talking about the other day. You know, how do we kind of ride the wave of energy to keep people engaged? Because if you play 12 songs at 160 BPM in a row, after song two, people are like, okay, I want to kind of take a breather.
Yeah, I know what this is going to be. It's so predictable and
and it's like, I can't do this for an hour straight, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, I need to stop and take a drink. But if you're continuing to jam, I have to choose now between taking a breather and staying in the moment.
Mm.
Like sometimes I do think structurally, like, oh, you know, maybe I should repeat the chorus a couple more times. So it's catchier, but I'm not like analyzing each line going like, is this word like a third grade reading level? Obviously, as evidenced by Make It Through, which by the way, that is really cool to hear. You said that it's an emotional experience for you or the most other than your own music, because that song, more than any other song I've written, has given me an emotional response just listening to it. Or playing it. And I've made like 3 or 4 different versions where I was like, okay, this is, I'm going to release this. And then I listen to it again. I'm like, oh, there's something off. I don't know what it is, depending on the version. But it always gets me emotionally. So I'm like, it's still worth working on, you know?
It's exciting. We are going to work on it. On it. Like as we release this, as we're going to be in the process of working on it right now, which is exciting. And we're going to hopefully have it out in the near future. By the time listening to this, we'll have it out in the near future under the Justice Trio, and that's going to be sort of our new claim to fame.
Yeah.
Another big question for you. Okay. Don't have some more questions. Big question for you. If you could play, write, whatever it be, with anyone past or present, drop them on me. Who would it be?
Oh, my God.
He's a pretty big guy. I don't know if he's that much recording experience. He seems to be doing a lot of other stuff, pretty busy, but yeah.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of stuff, but yeah.
Right. Using different mediums than I'm used to.
Yeah.
One of my biggest influences is a band called Mute Math.
Yes, you introduced me to them. Big fan.
Yeah, they're amazing. And their singer, Paul Meany, is the music director and producer for 21 Pilots now.
Right. Okay, yeah.
I think writing with him would be sick. And their old drummer, Darren King, he did some programming on The Life of Pablo, like Kanye, and he worked on some other big rapper. I can't remember who it was now. And he's got like some sample packs of like drum sounds and stuff. And I don't know. It just, his drumming style is so different. It's just got, well, I don't know. It just got that thing for me. I'm just like, this is. I don't know, I hear the judge in my head saying like, well, don't be cliche, you know, like Paul McCartney would be sick or John Lennon would be really cool. I really resonate with Imagine by John Lennon. Mm. And I mean, as does most of the world, but it's like, I've played it at a couple of shows.
Yep.
And like I got invited to be part of a John Lennon tribute show as a result of that. And like had a bunch of people come up and be like, you know, I've obviously heard this song a million times, but like you playing it made me cry. And like, I don't know, it just resonates with me, and it kind of feels like a mantra in a way. So it would be sick to write with John Lennon and play with him, especially because like I feel like a kinship in a way of like I can be super serious. And like, I mean, he wrote some like really depressing, sad songs.
Yes, something we have in common. Yes.
But all the videos I see, like, you know, back in the day when they were recording, he's always just like goofing off.
Yep.
And just doing super random shit. And I feel like, I mean, that was like tour in the US.
I was
like, if I wasn't dead in the back.
Which was, for those playing home, a lot of the time. He was. We had Caleb asleep for 27 hours a day. I only woke up for the shows. And then you had John desperately trying to have reprieve and sleep, being like, yeah, I don't think it'll be a problem just sleeping in the back. Like, there's a nice mattress in the back. I'm sure we'll be able to get any kind of sleep just in the back of the RV. I'm a liar. That's not possible.
Yeah.
And then just a consistent, like, rattling of the RV and just the standard noises it would make.
And the heat.
Yeah, the heat was good, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
But, like, I mean, I think that's the difference between just being... you know, I'm not the best at any of my instruments. You know, you could find dozens or hundreds of thousands of people that play guitar or piano better than me or sing better
than me. I'm sorry, I love that you started with dozens. I'm sorry, just like, I love that you were like, look, I may not be the best. There's probably a handful of people that are much better at it than me. It was like almost self-deprecatingly modest. And then you went... Yeah, there's a couple of boys from around town that, you know, they can strum the 6 strings a little better than me, but it's not about them today. It's about me. But anyways, I digress. And then you went hundreds, lots. Actually, yeah. You know, hundreds of thousands. It's fine. Lots of people. Anyways, I digress.
No, I don't know where my brain's at. I think that's like, I've realized I haven't done a ton of touring and stuff. I've done like 4 tours, which I mean a decently short amount of time since October of 2022.
That's a lot, especially over the last few years. That's pretty good.
Yeah. And I've realized like it's pretty miserable. Unless you make it fun.
Unless you make it fun. And also, I've said this on about 340 Asking Music episodes, of which there hasn't even been that many. if you're not a good hang, then it's not going to happen. It's not going to be a value. And we had that as a, not like a gamble that we thought you were going to be boring or something, but we'd never met you before. Right. You know, we see Rob occasionally. Dell is literally the glue that was sticking us all together because he knew all of us the best.
Right.
And we were like, oh, we're going to meet John for the first time. This will be fun.
Yeah.
You know, but we don't know what to expect.
Right.
And then it ended up being what it was. So it was not a problem at all. No one had to worry. But at the time, it was like, okay, so we got to get to know how we play. And we also have to get to know each other as people. We'll see what happens. Yeah. 2 weeks is 2 weeks. Yeah. But it ended up meshing perfectly.
Yeah. And I know you've had to wrangle me sometimes. but like, just being able to like shoot the shit and do like weird little dances and like make funny stuff happen and then be like, okay, actually we're recording right now. Or like, oh no, we're on in 3 minutes. And then just like, okay, now I'm going to
snap on.
Slay it, you know?
Yeah, I like that.
I like, yeah. So I think that would be interesting.
You know, I like that. And that actually leads me to something that I wanted to ask you. America, not necessarily versus, but America compared to Australia. How are you feeling musically and stuff now you're back? Now, obviously, there is a mixture of how long you've spent there and built and connections and things like that to here. But what are your thoughts on just music in general? Since we've been taking you around and doing open mics and playing that first show at Soul Bar and things like that, what are your thoughts on the music industry and how we do things, particularly on the Sunny Coast, compared to back in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I have pretty limited experience. That was... I didn't even realize it. That's just my second show over here. I played that open mic at Soul Bar. And then we played a Delacoma show in October. And then 2 days ago at Soul Bar was like the other show that I played.
Yeah, so you're just unqualified then. Don't worry about answering that. Oh, good.
No, but I haven't been out like and about enough to really know. It seemed like at Soul Bar, people weren't really there to get smashed. Like, necessarily?
No, they're there to have a good time. Right. And everyone has a varying thing of that rather than, if I can remember tonight, it wasn't successful.
Yeah.
There are a couple of places like that, but that is not what... It's not the clientele that Soul Bar tries to draw in as well. Yeah. That's also the truth.
Sure.
And also, I would thought you might have said this, but I feel like you're teasing on it is just the fact that we actually have responsible service of alcohol. So if someone shouldn't be there anymore, they're either not there anymore or at the very least they're not served anything.
Yeah.
As opposed to...
Yeah. Drink until you slide your way out the door.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of a... There's a lot of places to play. Like in Wisconsin, that's the majority of my experience.
Mm.
But it is like you just, you know, people want to watch football.
Yeah.
American football, that is. On the TV. And a lot of times it feels like you're like, I could just not play right now because...
I feel almost bad. Yeah. I feel like I'm taking up your time.
Yeah. If you're like fighting with it versus like at Soul Bar, obviously that's like a people know it's an original music venue.
And they come for that. And I think that's a segue back into what I was saying about... The amount of people who've never seen any of us play before and the amount of people that enjoy themselves.
Yeah.
As a Venn diagram, that's pretty much just the one circle.
Yeah.
But everyone had a great time.
Yeah.
So everyone's a winner on that front because everyone's like, oh, geez, I saw XYZ there. It was such a good time. It's always a good time at Soul Bar, no matter who's on. You know, that sort of vibe. That's the culture they're trying to build and that's what I think the Sunny Coast brings as a brand of music and community and...
Yeah.
And I think from my perspective, learning about you more, I feel like you would thrive under those conditions because it isn't a competition, it's a community and you like to be a part of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, we were talking earlier about like just how much effort it takes to just get show ready and put on a good show consistently night after night. If the audience is just kind of like, yeah, I just would rather just get smashed in the corner, like, I don't really care, then it's like, well, what's the point of playing? Yeah. And you always hear, like, a bunch of different perspectives on that. It's like, well, if you can get those people interested, you can probably get anyone interested.
Yeah.
And it's like, but, you know, it's kind of like pearls before swine in a way. It's It's like, well, that's a biblical reference for those of you who don't know. It's like you don't feed super high cuisine to a 3-year-old because they like don't appreciate it.
Yeah, there's a certain, like, that makes sense.
Because I do think that when you have a receptive audience that's just like, yeah, let's just have a good time, and you show up and you bring it.
Mm. It's hard not to have a good time as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. I feel like that's a good spot to put a pin in it, but what do you want to share with the world? What do you want to tell everyone? Like, we've got the Justice Trio happening at the minute with the beautiful Caleb from Treehouse, and we're putting that in as a work in progress since we came back from the States, but what else have you got going on? And
Well, I'm still writing like almost every day, which has been cool. Like, I gave myself the challenge of writing a song every day in November. I guess I didn't give it to myself. Shout out to Nate Bjorg. Yeah. In Wisconsin, for kind of including me on that challenge, and that kind of brought a lot of good stuff. And now, like, my just recently my brain has just been like, yeah, here's a little idea, and then I've been really happy with what's been coming out. It feels more, I feel like I'm judging myself less when I'm writing, which is just exciting, because I'm just like, it's just really, I am skewing more towards the like, do I enjoy it? And if I do, then sick. Like, I want to produce it and put it out.
Yeah. And I like that too.
Yeah. I'm going to have to start learning all the songs for Delicoma again.
yeah.
We still got a couple months on that, but I know it's going to fly by.
Yeah.
But that's all right. I mean, how I'm trying to approach music now is just like no pressure.
And you want to do what you want to do.
Yeah.
I don't want to do stuff I don't want to do.
Right.
Yeah. And I like that. I got to that point and I realized there's some things that I like doing for certain reasons, but I have got myself to a level of busyness that I am just going to do fun stuff with people I enjoy doing it with when I can do it.
Yeah. And you know, like, one of my favorite bands is called Reliant K. And I've listened to some interviews with them, and they were like, you know, we were just high schoolers that just wanted to play music. And somebody that was kind of like in the music industry saw them at a show and was like, hey, I want to produce like a record for you guys. I really like it. And they were like, sweet. And they like were like, okay, cool. Like, we'll do this. We'll put a record out. And then, you know, probably next year we'll go to college. And that'll be it.
And then...
And then they were like, they kept giving me like, oh, here's more money for another record. And they were like, okay. And then they kind of woke up like a decade later and like, and we'll probably have to get a day job soon or something. And it's like, no, it's just, you know, like, it just kept happening. And mentally, I didn't let myself play music in like any kind of significant way for so long that like when I was like 27, I was like, I'm going to be a musician now.
Yep.
Because I've wasted, you know, most of my 20s not doing it. And I put a lot of pressure on myself. And now I'm starting to mellow out and realize like, I don't want to just do music for the sake of, well, yeah, my job's musician. And I play, you know, 500 shitty gigs a year. But, you know, at least I'm a musician. It's like, no, like, it's so much work and it's so tiring and like it's such a grind to like get anyone interested because there's so much else going on.
Of course.
It's like you really got to love what you're playing.
Yeah.
And if you don't, then it doesn't feel like it's worth it at all. So that's what I'm... The very John Justice...
That's a very John Justice answer. No, I like it. I like it. And for anyone who hasn't heard John's stuff, you gotta listen to it. Like it's fantastic. He's got... You know, as you said, there are no more than 7 people in the world that are not as good as him at guitar, or better than him, sorry, at guitar and singing, which he said, I'm sorry I made that up to impress you. But yeah, essentially, you got to listen to his stuff. Justice Trio is going to be putting stuff out, which is just going to hopefully level up what's up there right now and put some body, put some band behind it. And it's very exciting, and I'm stoked I got to have a chat with you and sort of unpack a little bit more about what makes John Justice tick. So
yeah, man, thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Well, guys, that is another episode of the Ask a Muso podcast. I want to thank John for being here and just thank you guys all for coming back and joining me for the first episode of season 4. There's lots coming up. I promise it's going to be a really big season, really good season. And like, subscribe, listen on your favorite podcasting medium. And until next time, I'll see you later. Ha ha.